Now's the Time, episode 48. I'm Caleb Succo, and this is the podcast where we talk about how we can use our lives right now to worship our God. Friends, welcome back to Now is the Time, and I've got a lot planned for you today for this episode of Now is the Time. We're going to answer some questions. I'm going to give you a little update about what's going on here in Ukraine, and I want to talk about holiness. So I hope that you will stick with me for these topics. I think that you will find them interesting, and I also want to let you know, because I'm answering some questions today, that you can ask a question. And the simplest way to do that is to go to succofamily.org/ask. Okay, succofamily.org/ASK. And you can either leave a voicemail for me there any time of the day or just send me a note and ask some questions, because I am answering two questions today and I enjoy doing that because I know that there are things that I don't communicate or don't communicate well that people sometimes have questions about. And so I really think it's great if you ask a question and gives me the opportunity to answer, and probably somebody else had that same question, so it gives other people the chance to listen to those answers as well. All right, so let's do it in this order today. Let me first give you an update about what's going on in Ukraine so that you can be filled in there. Then I'll get to the questions, have two basic questions. And then I want to talk about holiness. What is holiness? How do you become holy? Why is holiness important? Okay, and we'll look at some of those things in more detail. So let's talk about what's happening in Ukraine. Well, basically, the big news here this week is the peace talks in Minsk. And I don't know if you kept up on the news there, but yesterday they finished up those talks, and basically they came out with another peace plan. And I'm really trying to be more positive, to have more hope in this kind of a peace plan. But the reality is that they've had peace plans before that just literally meant nothing. And in fact, there were more people that died under those peace plans than without those peace plans. And so I'm hoping and I'm praying that this peace plan will stick. It basically calls for a pulling back of artillery and rockets to, you know, I think artillery, they have to pull back 25 kilometers from the agreed upon line, and rocket systems, they have to pull back 70 kilometers, and then also removal of all foreign forces from Ukraine and a release of all captives. So we'll see. We'll see how that will happen. Officially, the ceasefire is supposed to start on Sunday morning at 12:01, the 15th of February. So I would do appreciate your prayers for that. But ultimately, what do we know? What do we know? We know that a ceasefire is always temporary. Peace that any government provides is always temporary. And ultimately, governments cannot provide people with the peace they truly need, which is the peace of Jesus. So anyway, I wrote about the peace plan a little bit yesterday, and I will put a link to it on the show notes for this episode. So if you go to succofamily.org/48, you can find a link to that. Some of my thoughts, and well, you know me, I'm thinking more about the peace that Jesus can give than the peace that President Poroshenko or President Putin or any other political leader can give. So we're waiting to see how those peace plans turn out. In the meantime, we are busy with ministry, and we really are. This weekend, in fact, tomorrow, I'm going out to the village to do some preaching and some filling in for a pastor who's gone out in the village and asked me to take his place for this Saturday, because their church meets actually on Saturday mornings. And then Sunday, I'm preaching in our church, and I really appreciate your prayers for me as as I preach God's word and proclaim its truth. And also, I'm right in the middle of teaching a online class, and I have 10 teachers in my class. I'm teaching them how to teach online. And so I really appreciate your prayers for that as well, because we are coming to the point where we're going to be offering our whole first level of training, theological training, online. And I'm going to be telling you more about that in the future. But this is really exciting, and it's really going to open up the door to hundreds, maybe thousands of people to be able to study theology and prepare for ministry online without leaving their own church, their own ministry context. And that's exciting. That is exciting. And it is desperately needed in Ukraine, in Russia, and in much of the world today. So I would really appreciate your prayers for that. And just stay tuned, because there may be some ways that you could help us with that as we get these courses. It takes work and it takes some money to get these courses ready to go online. And so we will need some help with that. And if you want to join us in helping with that, I'll be sharing more in the future about how you can do that. Okay, so that's enough for what's going on in Ukraine. A little ministry update for you as well. And now I want to get to a couple of questions. And the first one is from Mike. And Mike, forgive me if I say your last name wrong. Mike Grosh. I'm not sure how it's said. Spelled G-R-A-T-S-C-H. And Mike asked me this. Since Jesus knew he was the Son of God, did it make it easier to go through all the trials and suffering he experienced, and even to his death, than it would if he didn't know he was God? Would it be harder for us just to use our faith in the same circumstances versus his absolute knowledge of it? Okay, good question, Mike. And I think I've asked this question before in seminary classes, or I've heard it asked before, where it's like, you know, is it kind of like unfair? Like, you know, Jesus, he's God, he knew everything, he's all powerful. And so when he came to earth, yeah, of course, he could live a perfect life because he's all powerful and he's all knowing and all this stuff. No, I don't think it made it easier, to tell you the truth. And there's a couple things that we need to remember here. First of all, Paul talks about that when Jesus came in Philippians chapter 2, that he laid aside his glory. He laid aside his glory that he had in heaven. And I think that when he's saying that, a lot of what Jesus did is he chose not to use, you know, his almighty power necessarily. He lived as a person lives, okay? And so his physical strength was like your physical strength. His physical endurance was like your physical endurance. And even, I think, in a way, when it comes to his mental abilities, it was like you, because he developed, he learned. And that's not to say he was not all omniscient, because as God he was, but in his humanness, somehow he learned things. And so I think that there was that the things that Jesus experienced, he experienced them basically like you would or I would. And so I really don't think that we can say, no, it was easier for him because he knew the future. I mean, let's face the facts. We have the Bible. We know the future too. So really, we're not that much different than Jesus in that sense, right? And the truth is that knowing the future in Jesus' case might not have even made it easier, but harder, because he knew he was going to die on the cross, right? Which he did know. And so I don't think that these things necessarily made it easier for him. And the other thing that we need to remember here too is that Jesus had every right as God, as a perfect human, to say, no, I'm not going to suffer. Or when Pilate started asking these questions of him and just rained down fire on Pilate or on the Pharisees. And I think that would have been very hard not to do. And you think of all these things. When the devil was tempting Jesus in the wilderness, Jesus could have gone to the temple and just walked off into the air, but he didn't. So as God, as a perfect being, I think it was even more difficult for him in that sense of that he had to restrain himself and say, I'm going as a humble servant, not going to do this right now, even though I have every right to as God. And then the final thing that I think that we should remember there is, you know, when it talks about Jesus suffering in Scripture, it describes it in a way that it doesn't sound easy, okay? It just doesn't sound easy. And I think of, you know, like Isaiah 53, where it says he was despised and rejected. It says that he had no form, no majesty that we should, you know, look at him. It says, well, let me read Isaiah 53, starting verse 3. He was despised and rejected by others, and a man of sorrows, intimately familiar with suffering, and like one from whom people hid their faces, and we despised him. We did not value him. Surely he has borne our sufferings and carried our sorrows, yet we considered him stricken and struck down by God and afflicted. Okay, that's Isaiah 53, 3 and 4. Verse 5, but he was wounded for our transgressions and he was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that made us whole was upon him, and by his bruises we are healed. So this is the final thing that we need to remember here. Jesus bore upon himself our sin, our punishment. I'm not bearing on myself anyone else's sin or punishment. Well, maybe in a very, very minute way, you could say that, you know, I might take responsibility for my children's sins or something like that. Or if we're in a store and they break something, maybe I have to pay for it, you know, something like that. Very minuscule. Jesus took upon himself the sins of the world. That's harder. That is more difficult. And so, no, I think, Mike, really, when we look at who Jesus was and what he did for us, no, I don't think it was any easier. But yes, he could go through it, and he could go through it perfectly because he was God. And really what matters is that he did it, and that he did it for you and for me. And I think that that's what we need to come back to. And we remember that, you know, in many churches every month when we take communion, we remember his suffering on our behalf. And that's a very vital part of church life and why we take communion. All right, Mike, I hope that answers your question. Thank you for your question. Okay, next question comes from Gail Everett. And Gail, or I should say Dr. Everett, as I know her, was one of my professors in college, back at Shasta Bible College. And so she asked, how are the Ukrainian Christians ministering to those in the war zone? And what spiritual opportunities have opened up as a result? And a third question, how have you used my English class from Shasta Bible College to further your ministry? Okay, great questions. All right, I'll just take these one at a time here. How are the Ukrainian Christians ministering to those in the war zone? You know, here's the deal. The war is opened up many, many opportunities to serve. In fact, we, with our Ukraine Crisis Fund, have been trying to aid mainly churches in the war zone, those that pastors and ministers that have stayed behind to help those that are kind of left behind in these war zones here. And so we get actually quite a few letters talking about what they're doing, how they're ministering to people. And I just read one that we got this month, and it's from a brother in Eastern Ukraine. And I won't give names here or anything, but this brother has a large family. I think he's got 9 or 10 kids, but he's very active in ministering to people, and just his heart and his ability to minister is pretty amazing. And so he's got a little old Russian car, and he goes around, and he first started ministering to in the old people's home, where here's the bombs falling outside, and he's in there ministering to these, what do you call it? Not a retirement home. My mind gets stuck in Russian here a little bit. But ministering to these old people that are stuck, that have no transportation, and sharing Christ with them. And just as, you know, many of them just on the verge of death. And in fact, in the letter that we received, said that just over the last few months, about 20 of them had died. And so he's ministering in the old people's home. Not only that, he's traveling to another town. In fact, the town of Ilovaisk, maybe you've heard of that. But that is a town that was one of the worst battles of this war. Happened there. Many Ukrainian soldiers died. I'm sure many on the other side died as well. And anyway, they have prisoners of war there, Ukrainian soldiers, and they take them out every day, and basically they're doing forced labor. And so what this guy does is he actually takes bread and food, and as these Ukrainian soldiers are getting into the vans to go and do their forced labor, he tries to kind of sneak them food. And he said that the people who are overseeing these prisoners of war, they kind of turn their heads the other way and let him do it. And so he's able to just, in a very real way, help these Ukrainian soldiers that are prisoners of war and being forced into labor there in the town of Ilovaisk. And you know, there are many, many different churches that are doing similar things, just simply feeding people, and yet at the same time being able to share with them the gospel. And many of these people are those who have been injured in the war. Some of them have lost parents or children in the war, and so their hearts are very open to the gospel. And so with our Ukraine Crisis Fund, basically we have connected with a number of different pastors, different churches, different people that have some contact and are able to go into these war zones and are really doing the hard work of physically helping these people, as well as being able to just share with them the love of Christ. And so we don't really know exactly, you know, the fruit of all that labor, but I can tell you that the churches in Eastern Ukraine have really risen to this problem, and they are actively serving the Lord in a way that I think many of them were not actively serving before. And this one, just this guy that I shared his story with you about, you know, he's just one example of many people who are doing things like this. All right. Well, Gail also asked what spiritual opportunities have opened as a result. Well, I mean, anytime you're in a war zone like that, people are just looking for answers, and they begin to look for spiritual answers because they realize that the answer is not in the government. It's not in the country where they live. And so we have seen those kind of opportunities. We've also seen those kind of opportunities in our own church, where we've been able to house some refugees. And I know that just we housed a number of refugees, some of them who are actually Muslim. And I think I shared this on the blog a while back, that we were in a meeting late one night with the brothers. We got a knock on the door, and this three people walked in with a cake and tea, and they said, "We want to just thank you for allowing us to live here in your church building for the past 6 months. You have welcomed us like family. We have never experienced that kind of love before." And the one lady said, she said, "I am a Muslim, but I have never seen love like this before." And basically what they were saying is that they found an apartment, and they're going to move out of the facilities, and they were thanking us. And this lady said, "I might be moving out, but I'm not going to leave the church." And that was a Muslim lady that said that. And so certainly you can see the spiritual opportunities that have opened up as a result. Another example of that is a a young guy that I met. His name is Denis, and he was serving in eastern Ukraine, and a mortar exploded near him, and he got shrapnel in his face, took out one of his eyes. And, you know, one of the members of our church made contact with him, started visiting him, sharing the gospel with him. And I was able to meet him too and talk with him, just very open to the gospel. And he can't see though now. He can see a little bit with one eye. So I was able to give him a little tablet where he can make the text really big so that he can see, and he can also listen to the audio Bible there. And he was so, so grateful for that. So those are some of the examples of opportunities that have opened up. And concerning your last question, how have I used the English class? Gail Everett is asking me. The English class that she taught me at Shasta Bible College. Well, let me think. I would say a couple things here. First of all, I do write a lot now, and so I'm sure that somehow that English class probably had a good effect on me as far as understanding grammar a little bit better and enabling me and helping me to be able to write more. Also, I would say that learning a language, any language, the better you know grammar, the better you know grammar of your own language, oftentimes easier it makes it for you to learn a new language. And so I think just having a better understanding of English grammar has probably helped me in learning Russian as well. Okay? All right. Those are the questions that I had for this episode. And again, if you have questions that you want to ask me for the next episode, episode 49, just go to sugofamily.org/ask. Okay. Now, one more thing here. Okay. You know what? I might just have to save that for another time. I'm just looking at the time here. We're already just over 20 minutes into this podcast. And I wanted to talk about holiness today. And let me just do this. I'm actually going to be preaching about holiness this Saturday and Sunday. And so I'm just going to give you a very, very short preview of that. And what I'm going to do is, instead of just going over that here on the podcast, I'm going to put a separate blog post up about holiness, okay? And what I want you to do is, I would really appreciate it if you would go and read that blog post about holiness and let me know what you think. And I will share this with you. The main premise upon the idea of holiness, why I'm preaching on holiness, and why I'm writing the blog post on holiness, is because of this. Too often, we think that through good deeds, that through discipline, that through by wearing a certain style of clothing, by not doing certain things, we can become holy. And that's just wrong. Holiness comes only from God. Holiness comes only from God. And so the main text that I'm preaching on this Sunday is Exodus chapter 3, where Moses goes to the burning bush, and what does God say? This is holy ground. Take your shoes off. This is holy ground. And we understand that holiness comes from the presence of God. And our lifestyle and our living always, always ought to be a response to that holiness. We cannot attain holiness through all of our trying and living by a list of rules of do's and don'ts. We can never attain holiness. Only God can give us that holiness. So I really would like, obviously there's a lot of details that I'm not giving you right now, but I will put a link to that in the show notes for this episode, which is episode 48. So go to sugofamily.org/48 and check out that blog post. Let me know what you think. Holiness? What is it? How do we get it? Why is it important, okay? All right, friends, that is it for now. Please keep us in your prayers. We can continue to minister here in Ukraine. We don't want to leave. We want to stay here. God has us here. There's a lot of work for us to do, and we really appreciate your prayers for us. All right, friends, blessings.